move straight into the presentation I think everybody's interested in, so I'll be very, very brief. Most of you may know that we're fairly young in terms of the Barbados Medicinal Cannabis Licensing Authority. Our act was officially proclaimed in September of 2020, and our regulations also as well confirmed in October of 2020. We officially opened the regime for acceptance of applications just in January. But even though we are fairly young, you know, there are some critical core principles that are important for us in terms of how we are building out or intending to build out this industry. And one of those core principles has always been about this notion of inclusivity in the context of having what we call a locally derived industry. That has been one of the watchwords that has been, I would say, one of our watchwords for the industry from the time the development of medicinal cannabis industry was thought about in Barbados. The government itself has given a mandate, have continually said that this is about an industry in which Barbadians should be able to participate at all levels and as much as they would want to do so. So in that stead, even though we are the authority and primarily responsible for regulating the industry, we also understand that because we are building something, that there is an onus on us to ensure that we can help those who want to participate as much as possible. So even over the period of 2020, as Tracy would have alluded to, we've held a number of other sessions as well. For instance, in I think it was in July of 2020, we held a market information session where we worked with an international investment company just so that people can have information on what the market looks like for cannabis, what are the costs, what is happening globally in terms of the cannabis market. We've held sessions, particularly in relation to cultivation. We've held sessions with master growers to talk about, you know, quality standards, what is the most efficient methods, etc. So we've really taken very seriously that commitment to ensuring that people who want to participate will have the information. And we did not want necessarily to wait until the industry had started, to wait until there were licenses for us to be able to do that, because we see that this is part of preparation for people in the industry and to be able to understand as much as possible the dimensions of the industry so that we are able to go into it with your eyes open and a very clear idea of what are the challenges, what are the best practices, you know, and so that we can have an industry and have Barbadians particularly who want to participate, having as much as possible the knowledge that they need to. My final thing that I would want to indicate, as Tracy said, you know, we always say that we're a learning organization, always willing to continue the dialogue. So certainly for us, this is something that we've started, but we will also be driven by the demand in terms of how we go forward. In actuality, these sessions that we are having now, this one today, the other one that we are having later on in terms of cultivation, the design of these sessions were influenced by a stakeholder survey that we sent out and asked people what is it that they would like to know, what is it that they would like to understand, to make sure that we are providing a forum that is directly relevant. That is something that we committed to. Here, you know, we talk about being flexible, we talk about being nimble and being and learning. So I'm always very much to say, you know, we will hold our hands up in the air and say that, you know, we're not going to say to anybody that, you know, it's perfect, that we know everything and that the regime is, you know, set in stone. But we are very cognizant that as we go on, that changes will have to be made, that we will have to be able to adjust. And we're just sending the signal that that is something that we are very open to. And finally, Tracy, just like as you did, just let me thank the panel that we have and looking forward to, you know, a really great discussion and engagement. Thank you.
Thank you, Chantel. We're going to get into the nitty gritty. We have to start off to present Marcus Bubbleman Richardson. He has been an entrepreneur since 1993. You can correct me if I'm wrong, Marcus. His field of experience spanned from industrial hemp cultivation to cannabis microphotography and advanced medical cannabis extraction. Marcus. I am told that Marcus is the man. He has been one of those first persons in Canada to get into the business. And that in 1999, Marcus established Fresh Headies Limited and Bubble Man was born, which helped popularize the water method for extracting cannabis, creating the first 3-bag multitasking filtration kits, as well as the first 4-to-8-bag kits. In 2018, Marcus was a founder of a new company called Embark Health Inc., along with a professional team, where they opened a quintessential extraction lab in Canada with seven types of extraction and the capabilities of processing 100,000 pounds of biomass per facility per day. Very impressive. And so with that, let me hand over to Bubble Man presentation to teach us about what he has known for a while. Marcus, over to you.
Well, thank you so much. It's a real joy and a pleasure to sit on the panel today and share this information with the people of Barbados. So thank you, first of all, for inviting me. And I'm definitely not the man of anything. If anything, I'm a humble servant of Jah. And that's sort of the pathway that I've been on for the last 25 plus years. So I am an extractor. I have been focused on using water and ice to isolate the active ingredients in cannabis. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure how much people know about cannabis, so I'll try to keep it more basic and not get overly complex about it. But we understand that cannabis produces different compounds that are called cannabinoids and terpenes, which are the essential oils of cannabis. And these compounds are secreted in a resin gland. These small resin glands, about 20 plus years ago, I discovered that they had a very thin wax membrane that held them in place. And that if you made the wax membrane very cold, you could make it brittle. And if you mixed up that cold mixture with ice, the little resin glands, the little trichomes as they're called, would break the little heads. In fact, I can show a little photo just so people can get an idea. Here's one of my macro photographs of a cannabis plant. And those are little resin glands. The little balls of those resin glands are actually where cannabis produces 100% of its medicinal components. And so whether you're using a solvent or you're using CO2 or you're using water and ice or you're doing mechanical screen separations to isolate these glands, that's where the medicinal components are going to be. So first step is to understand that. Once you understand where the medicine is, then you can start looking at how you can get the medicine isolated and purified away from the rest of the plant matter, the fibers, the cellulose, all the things that are non-active medicinal components. And once you do that, you create a much purer form of medicine. So in 1999, I discovered that these little glands, due to their density, are affected by gravity and they sink in water. And that really created the water extraction craze, because if you just take a little bit of cannabis and you put it in a little jar with some ice and you shake it up and you put it on your windowsill, you'll notice those little resin glands look like sand. They break off, they sink into the bottom of the jar. You can scoop the cannabis out with a spoon, filter through a coffee filter. And this was the basis of water extraction. Fast forward 20 plus years. Now I'm part of a company called Whistler Technology, where we develop industrialized equipment for this process, stainless steel industrial commercialized equipment. And then my company, Embark Health, which you mentioned earlier, which is a processing company here in Canada, we use that equipment for our water extraction. So very simply put, we have a 300 liter tank. We place a bunch of flowers in, 6+ kilos of flowers in, a bunch of ice, a bunch of water, and then we basically wash the resin off of the plant. So it's a very safe method to use. There's no explosive solvents or chemicals that are needed. There's no real, you don't have to worry about being exposed to chemicals or solvents, because it's really just water and ice. Most people have access to water and ice wherever they are. And it's really a great way to extract these little resin glands off of the plant. And I wanted to do a little bit of science, just a tiny little bit, in regards to what's going on inside that resin gland that is producing these complex terpene profiles and cannabinoid profiles. So, you know, first of all, there are three different types of trichomes. That's important to note. The photograph that I shared earlier actually shows just two of them. The taller ones are called capitate stalks, and the shorter ones are called capitate sessile. And then there's a very small one that just, it seems to sit right on the leaf, and that's called the bulbus. And those are the three types of trichomes that are going to be secreting medicinal components in cannabis. So what's going on inside of those little gland heads is you have these compounds, these sacs called organelles. And there's two different types of organelles. You have one called a plastid, which produces phenols, which are alcohols. And there's another one called a vacuole, and that produces hydrocarbons, which are terpenes. And so the phenols, which are alcohols, and the hydrocarbons, which are terpenes, push themselves up into the upper membrane, the upper cuticle of the glandular trichome. And there's a little fibrous mat in there that's kind of the laboratory. And what those compounds do is they're the precursors to the first cannabinoid, which is created, which is called CBGA. As we know, or we don't know, so we're here to learn, all cannabinoids exist in acid form on the cannabis plant, meaning they are non-psychoactive or active when they are acid versions. So we know about decarboxylation. When you smoke cannabis, when you vaporize cannabis, when you heat cannabis, what you do is a process called decarboxylation, where you're removing that carboxylic acid ring from the molecule, and you end up with THC and CBD. And so all of that is going on in that little trichome. The CBGA is merely the first cannabinoid, and from CBGA, you can produce the entire terpene profile, up to 180 different terpenes, and the entire cannabinoid profile, you know, over 100 plus cannabinoids are present in these little tiny resin glands. And cannabis is by no means the only plant that secretes essential oils out of glandular trichomes. And if you guys are taking notes today, I know I'm throwing a lot of sort of scientific terms at you. Glandular trichomes is a good one to write down and start maybe Googling and doing your research on, because it is the glandular trichome that produces the medicinal components inside cannabis. And when you hear all of us talking today, whether we're talking about hydrocarbons or ethanol or CO2 or, you know, water extraction, you know, all of these processes are doing the same thing differently. They are isolating and extracting the medicinal compounds from cannabis. I've always been what is called a solventless guy, which is really kind of a misnomer at best. What it means is I'm not using chemical solvents, but if you understand that chemistry, everything is a chemical, everything is a compound, and then you get to understand that water is the universal solvent. It's not being used as a solvent in this particular process, but it definitely is the universal solvent. And of course, the terpenes themselves are also hydrocarbons. So much like butane and propane are hydrocarbons, so too are the terpenes found in cannabis. D-limonene being one that you may or may not know in Barbados. I'm sure that you know about it in Jamaica, Wayne, because you grow so many oranges there, and you can take those peels and you can extract pure D-limonene from the orange peels. Cannabis also produces this compound. Cannabis produces it in a very safe amount for people to inhale, and has been doing so for thousands of years, whereas D-limonene extracted pure is quite dangerous. You wouldn't want to take it and put it into a vape pen in a bad ratio. It's actually a degreaser. It will clean the grease right off of an engine block. So it's a very, very powerful, very caustic solvent. So I am kind of on the solventless side of things, but I always have to sort of mention the misnomer of solventless being that all the terpenes present in cannabis are indeed hydrocarbons, so that there's really no such thing as a solventless process. There's just people doing different processes. So I've been doing water extraction for 20 years. I've taught tens of thousands of people all around the world how to do this process. And now I'm really, you know, excited about countries like Barbados stepping into this industry, allowing the local people to have a medicinal, you know, platform where they can acquire these very important medicines that engage with our endocannabinoid system. For those of you that don't know, the endocannabinoid system is a system much like the central nervous system or the immune system. If you think of those two systems as pedals on a bike, you could think of the endocannabinoid system as the crank that keeps everything flowing smoothly. And when everything is flowing smoothly in the body, we call that homeostasis. And we know and have learned from many of the doctors out there who have been studying this now, and from many of the people who were learning about this even years before doctors were allowed to learn about it, we know that, you know, there are receptors in the peripheral organs, there are receptors in the brain for cannabinoids CB1 and CB2, and that the compounds in cannabis are actually regulating almost all of our biological functions. So if you're having a hard time sleeping, if you need to stimulate your appetite, if you need to, you know, curve your appetite, if you, you know, there are so many different things in regards to biological functions that people get into these diseases, that when you can find a plant like cannabis, it's so easy to grow and fairly easy to isolate and extract, it's a real benefit to the people. So that's one of the things that drives me. I've been involved with medical since almost day one. My good friend, my dear friend, Hillary Black in Canada here started the BC Compassion Club in about 1997. And I did everything I could to facilitate that. Of course, that was very early on. So it was really the most vulnerable people in our society who she was standing up for. A lot of people that were homeless, a lot of people that had mental health issues, and almost all of them were terminally ill. And so those things were all stacked on top of one another: homeless, mental health issues, and terminal illness. So you can imagine the obstacles that some of these people were dealing with. And then to have an angel like Hillary come out and decide to sort of leave her cushy life on in West Vancouver and move to the east side of Vancouver to live like a pauper and to absolutely help every single person that she possibly could, that had a very strong imprinting on me at a very early time. And it made me realize that, you know, this is a very important plant and we need to get it out there and accessible to the people. So I'm absolutely excited to be here on the panel. I'm not sure if I took more time than I should, or if you want me to speak longer. If anyone has any questions in regards to water extraction and the simplicity of it, I explained it a little bit before, but this is a process that is not overly complex. We isolate the glands away from the rest of the plant. We dry the glands properly in lyophilization ovens, which are freeze dryers, where we sublimate the water out of the hash. That's going to be very important from a medicinal standpoint, because microbial content can offer problems to people who have compromised immune systems or other health problems that they're dealing with. So it's very important that when you're making a medicine for people, that you strive to follow the best SOPs that you can possibly follow, which are standard operating procedures, good operating procedures, keeping everything absolutely clean, and just making sure all the way through the chain of custody that you're respecting the plant and you're keeping it, away from any type of contamination. It's really a next level from food production, because you are dealing with people who are taking this as a medicine. Did I go over my time, or should I?
No, Marcus, you were perfect. You were perfect. I think the only complaint we're seeing in here is that you were a little fast. I'm sure you're going to get a lot of questions. We do have about 20 minutes to have some questions. So if you have a question, please raise your hand in the little icon that allows you to raise your hand, and or you can type it in the chat and I will read it out for Marcus to respond. So questions can commence. Oh, can we contact Marcus to get more answers about water extraction? Marcus?
Yes, absolutely. I make myself very accessible. Probably one of the easiest ways is through social media. I'm BC Bubbleman on Instagram. I do have a lot of followers on there. So I would request that when you do send me a message on there, that you give me a couple of days to reply. I get about 300 of them every day. And I try to answer all of them. But sometimes people feel like I'm maybe ignoring them after a couple of days. But within 3 days, you will hear from me. Absolutely. And then you can check out my company as well, Embark Health Inc., which is here in Canada, on our website. And there's some contact information through there as well.
Excellent. Are there any other questions?
I have a question. Hi.
Go ahead, Paul.
Have you ever used, I did not hear all of it, I was kind of traveling. Have you ever used liquid nitrogen?
I have absolutely used liquid nitrogen. Yes, liquid nitrogen is a bit tricky in regards to handling it and having douars and having access to it. But yes, I have used liquid nitrogen in a variety of forms. Originally, I thought that spraying it on the plant to cool the plant. Right off the bat in this question, liquid nitrogen is really the only one you want to play around with if you're looking to do cold. Dry ice is something I would avoid like the plague. It's not something that's going to be helpful. And the way it gets the the plant cold really affects the cellulose material of the plant. It tends to break it up into very small powders. When people use dry ice, they don't use any liquid. So, you know, water hash works amazing because all the resin sinks in the water. The water acts as a transfer chamber and all of the plant matter floats. Generally, when you're using liquid nitrogen, especially if you're spraying it the way people were doing with liquid CO2 and dry ice as well, kind of just creating this cold environment, what we found was that the material broke up too much and we ended up with much more contaminant than we wanted to because there was nothing left to keep it afloat. But once we started actually submerging in liquid nitrogen, you could actually extract the resin off fairly efficiently. It does, there's a machine out there right now that some friends of mine have come out with called the Cryo Can. And they're selling this machine. It's fairly expensive. It's about $1.5 million US. And I think it does about 600 to 800 pounds every hour of fresh material. So that's another advantage that you can do it with fresh material. So yeah, liquid nitrogen, I would just tell people if you are gonna play around with that, please have an understanding of liquid nitrogen. It is extremely cold. It does not hold very long depending on the quality of dewar that you purchase. So it does evaporate even in a dewar. And so that's a great question. That's cutting edge. Not many people are using liquid nitrogen.
So when you use the liquid nitrogen, do you immerse the material in water first?
Oh, no, I immerse it in liquid nitrogen.
Straight in the nitrogen as it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when,
this is a method that will actually
frozen.
Well, the heads will come out very, very cold, absolutely, but they'll break off and they'll isolate. You need to have screens underneath the liquid nitrogen. So it's quite, that's why I mentioned the Cryo Can. These guys have been doing liquid nitrogen for a while. Matt Armstrong and Chris Baroni in California have been playing around with this. They sold a rosin that was called Baroni. And what it was they were doing some liquid nitrogen extracts to create SIFT. And then taking that SIFT and pressing it into rosin. And that's what they were calling Baroni.
Yeah, the reason I ask because I'm a dairy farmer. So I import semen in cryo tanks. And my tanks last about 3 months with the nitrogen in there.
Okay, so that's pretty good actually. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Someone would like to hear a little bit more on biomass.
Well, the biomass is everything. Fire in, fire out. You know, you're not going to be, cannabis is not something that you can, you know, take something of low quality and turn it into gold. You know, it really is a matter of, you know, what I do is I purify. I have nothing to do with quality. Quality is done in the genetics and in the growing. And so it's why I really want to sort of express the importance of potentially when you're growing cannabis to move away from salts. These are not the ideal foods to get the plant to express its chemovaric profile in the proper ways. A living soil is the ultimate. Creating a living biome, growing under the sun in Barbados, it's a no-brainer. You guys have an incredible sun profile. And producing living soil, so soil that has living bacteria and living fungi that creates a rhizosphere around the roots that is a protector and a helper to the plants. It will access minerals, it will break down things in the soil that the plant itself can't do readily, and it'll do it at a very accelerated rate. So we often see when things are grown in living organic soils, particularly regenerative ones, which make them much more sustainable. Big agriculture is quite the opposite. They like to destroy the biome with chemicals, and then they have to continue to purchase inputs to put into those farms. And what they do is they slowly destroy everything that's in the soil, and you see the food quality go down, down, and down. And so, you know, I'm hoping that the overregulation of cannabis can spill over a little bit into our food, air, and water quality, and we can understand that poisoning the water tables and destroying the biome in the soil and destroying our air is not a sustainable way for us to continue to, you know, create a proper planet for our children. So I really urge people in Barbados, if you're going to be growing cannabis, you have the advantage, create a living soil, There's an amazing group out there that you can look up called the Dragonfly Earth Medicine. And they're run by a couple by the name of Josh and Kelly up in Canada. And they are just the most unbelievably dynamic, incredible couple who are just willing to share their information readily. And they actually offer certification to farmers. If you can do things the way they suggest you do them, which is a closed loop, regenerative, organic, sustainable method of farming, you get a certification from them, and it's growing. They've been doing it in a variety of countries, and I would know they would absolutely love to be, get in contact with some people from Barbados.
Marcus, we have, it's Bob. Bob wants to know the most consumed extract concentrated form.
What's the most consumed extract concentrated form? Well, that's hard to say. You know, for a long while, I'd say that it was probably butane oil. It was very popular. It was made accessible to everyone. Everyone was doing it. You know, it was, you go on the internet and 5 minutes later, you could be making this oil. Very dangerous, proper for a chemist to be doing with proper equipment. Butane is a very dangerous compound, so I don't suggest that at all. But right now it seems like oils and hashes, you know, there's all sorts of different solvent extracts. They always seem to be very popular. People love the potency of them. From a medicinal standpoint, you know, when people contact me and say, oh, my son has a brain tumor, or he has a tumor on his lung, or, you know, generally those are things that, I'm not a doctor, but I always point people in the direction of something very strong and pure in regards to cannabinoids. If I developed cancer tomorrow, I certainly wouldn't smoke joints to try and get rid of it. So there's different ways to do different things, but it's hard to say because it's different everywhere in the world. You know, for me, what's in my pipe is water hash and dry sift. Those are the things I use medicinally. I have an ACMPR license here in Canada and have since 2014. So it's very, very nice to live in a country where, you know, you can't imagine when you need this as a medicine and it's illegal and they can throw you in jail for it. And then for that to finally crack open and change, which I'm guessing you guys are going through that right now. It's almost the best kind of medicine right away, because to have to use a medicine that is illegal, that puts you in a situation that makes you feel like a criminal, is not helping your illness in any way. So my hat's off to Barbados for opening this up to the people and allowing them to, you know, get prescriptions from their doctors and eventually purchasing from some of the people who very well may be on this panel right now, learning about processing and growing. And I just think it's wonderful.
I want to invite Sheldon, Wayne, and Bob to jump in. I know we have a panel after this discussion, but I want to really have an informative and inclusive discussion even at this point. So if there's anything you wish to add, please feel free to do so. We also have another question here. What method can you use for safe consumption of resin?
Okay. Yeah. Well, a lot of different ways. I mean, depending on what your resin is, you can put it in a pipe. Sometimes people put it on a screen. Sometimes people put it on top of herb. You could put it in a steamer. You could put it in a vaporizer. You can literally smoke it off what is called a dab rig. Yeah, there's a dab rig. I should have.
Want to show that again, Bob?
Here, a little pipe.
Bob was just.
Let me see here.
I think Marcus is getting his.
Yeah, exactly. No, mine's packed away. Mine's packed away. But yeah, he's got the steamer.
I just think on the Barbados, let's say, I'm not sure they're not pushing a heavy smoking consumption agenda.
No, we're not.
So that's what I'm saying. The other methods of consumption is where we kind of want to steer the direction until, you know, but right now where it's at, I think the methods of consumption that I'd say one may be most preferred by patients if they cannot smoke. And then secondly, this what would be made available to patients. So, you know, which one would be easier to make available to patients? And then which one do you find them more preferring if they cannot smoke? And then we try to bridge that gap as the industry develops.
Yeah, well said. Absolutely. You know, with cannabis, it's unique. I think the people who are now going into regulations, you know, smoke never seems like a good idea for anything. But cannabis is unique in the sense that it has nucleation points present in the plant, compounds that act as nucleation points in the lungs. And it's why it's good for asthma. It's an expectorant. It's nothing like tobacco smoke that actually causes damage to the lungs, because the nucleation points that are present in cannabis, when you smoke them, the smoke itself does not allow itself to get into the deeper, most sensitive regions of the lungs. And that's why people who have smoked for decades and decades and decades don't get asthmas or emphysemas or any type of lung ailments. I would be most concerned with the paper and the glue I was wrapping my cannabis in. I haven't smoked in over 20 years. I use something called dabbing, and I heat up a quartz bowl. I get it to a perfect temperature with a small laser thermometer that tells me when it's at 445 degrees Fahrenheit. And then I drop my little concentrate, whether that's bubble hash or some rosin, into the banger. And that just vaporizes a really nice, it's the best experience I've had. So I'm not a smoker at all. But when he mentioned the different methods for safe consumption of resin, there are quite a few of them, vaporizing being the safest.
Great, just to add to what you just said, Marcus, you raise a good point about consumption. And I think from my perspective, I'm more of the viewpoint that for the program we're talking about, a medical version of a product should be our focus. So, you know, tinctures, capsules, topicals, you know, things that are easy for people to quantify and to dose. And my philosophy about cannabis is the minimum effective dose should be your pursuit. So whatever is going to allow you to get the efficacy that you're seeking from the smallest amount of consumption possible should be the focus. And you mentioned earlier, and you really covered a lot in your quick conversation, but you talked about the active components in cannabis, and the acid bonded cannabinoids, as well as the decarboxylated cannabinoids, have benefit that we should be looking at as well. For me personally, my extraction method that I use leads me to a tincture, a topical, and a capsule. And I find that those forms of consumption are best for the conditions that I try to treat for myself. And I agree with you 100% when you said smoking is not the best objective for people who are looking for medicinal relief, even though some people do find, you know, vaporization to be a faster mode of effectiveness as well as smoking. It seems counterintuitive to be putting smoke into your lungs if you're trying to treat a medical condition. So tinctures, topicals, extracts, concentrates that are consumable or applicable to the skin, to me, are the focus of a medical program.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with that. I agree with what Marcus Sheldon and Bob has said. We own a medical practice as well in Canada, and we prescribe, we don't prescribe smokables at all. Most of what we do in terms of prescriptive products, you know, would be in the form of tinctures and drops and capsules and so on. You know, we have a lot of oil-based products, that we prescribe, because, as far as smoking is concerned, raw cannabis, we don't prescribe that simply because it tends to, you could potentially be trading one medical condition for another, right? So we generally stay away from that. We do have some vaporized products, and again, for the most part, all of our prescriptive products tend to be oil based, sublinguals, tinctures, drops, capsules, and so on. So I agree with that concept completely when it comes to a medical approach.
No, Tracy, sorry. I was just going to
add. The only thing I would mention in regard. Oh, go Marcus. Ahead.
No, sorry. No, I was just going to add, both to Sheldon and to Wayne. So that's exactly the focus of our regime here. We talk about orals and topicals. So exactly the capsules, the drops, the tinctures, et cetera, is the focus of where we want to be able to look at products and stuff that are going to be extracted, and not so much the smoking. So off the bat, that is not something right now that's going to be focused on the regime. However, in the context of the therapeutic facility, there is the possibility that you can be able to consume your medicinal cannabis through you know, through perhaps vaporizing, and we're looking at that and trying to get some consensus around that, but we're very much focused on those medicinal products.
You know, the only thing I wanted to add, and not to be, you know, the sort of the advocate to the opposite side, but we have to be careful when we create medical cannabis that we don't forget the most vulnerable. So it's great that you want to do topicals and capsules and vaporization, but I have a friend who goes by the name of Crash, and he is a medical patient. He had advanced multiple sclerosis at a very young age. He was 25 years old. He would shake unlike anything you could possibly ever imagine. It was so shocking how much this man shook. He couldn't put a pipe up to his mouth, or he'd chip the glass, or he'd chip his tooth. He had to have his head held. And he required intensely strong cannabis doses that topicals and tinctures just couldn't, they couldn't touch his tremors. And they would roll this guy up a big joint with oil and hash and cannabis. And he was on The Nature of Things by Dave Suzuki, which is on my my YouTube channel, if you want to check it out. It was through the BC Compassion Club. And they showed this man, and he can't talk. He's like, he can't talk at all. He's shaking the worst you've ever seen a human being shake in your life. It's so heart-wrenching to see. He smokes half of this joint, and he goes back to being an almost normal person. He can hold a conversation. He's no longer having tremors. So we have to be very, very careful that we don't forget about the most vulnerable patients like him when we decide that we're only going to allow certain methods of consumption, because they all, believe it or not, have their place. And that's all I wanted to say about that.
No, you're right about that. That is a good point. There is benefit to all the modes of consumption, and you're right, we shouldn't ignore that mode for certain situations. But, you know, from a general perspective, a medically minded program wouldn't necessarily be pushing smoke, you know, but what you're saying is true. And I believe I did see that video, and it was very eye-opening to see that, for sure.
Yeah. Marcus, I completely agree. We can't rule out every form of consumption. And we really do have to look at the more vulnerable part of the medical use spectrum as well. My point, and I agree with Sheldon, my point is that, we in cases where it is not necessary for us to prescribe something smokable, we certainly avoid that type of prescriptive product.
I mean, we should look and understand that this isn't a new conversation we're having. You know, for instance, my goodness, the Rastafarians have been having these conversations for decades, and we need to involve all the people who have been a part of this conversation and not try to, you know, take it and turn it into this sort of antiseptic, hospitalized sort of thing. We can, you know, there are people that have known about the medicinal benefits of this plant for a very long time, and I think they have a lot to say on the subject. And how we roll out these new platforms are going to be very important. And it's very important that we listen to the people who practiced the civil disobedience that got us to where we are today. Because I can promise you, Barbados did not change the rules for people following the rules. They changed the rules because of civil disobedience. They changed the world rules because other countries were changing their rules, thanks to a small group of people who were willing to practice civil disobedience, put themselves at risk, and get us to a place where we can actually use this plant medicinally, and most importantly, legally.
Okay, so we're going off topic right now because we also are restricted by time, and we do have a few questions. So to get back onto topic, there's a question here about bioavailability. Inhalation provides a lot more bioavailability than any other ingestion or topical application. So the question really is about bioavailability. That's one question to you, Marcus. And the second question is there a stark difference between smoking biomass and vaping oils?
I mean, absolutely. When you're smoking biomass, you're basically, you know, really what you're doing is you're vaporizing, believe it or not. So the cherry on the joint is heated up to a very hot temperature. And the flower behind the cherry, as you suck the hot air through, is much like a steam pipe. It's steaming the joint. So a lot of what you get from a joint is a vaporized product. But when you've concentrated all that resin into an oil, and now you're vaporizing that, I mean, you're getting a much higher dose than you would of from, you know, from the cannabis because of how diluted the resin is on the plant matter. So it really dilutes the medicinal component when it's on the plant matter, especially if you're burning it, because if you're vaporizing it, well, then it's just almost no different than vaporizing the oil. You're vaporizing the resin off of the plant. Once again, it's just going to be diluted. So you're going to be getting much less of it versus from the oil, which is going to be extremely concentrated. What was the other question in regards to, bioavailability. Yeah, I mean, I find for sure when it comes to inflammation, when it comes to pain, a lot of the people that I know medically, they love to dab concentrates because it's almost instantaneous, the reduction of inflammation that they feel. And if we understand that inflammation is really what causes almost all disease, and inflammation is really what the majority of us will end up dying from in our lives as we get older and older and older, and the inflammation gets worse and worse and worse, eventually the body just shuts down. So it's a very important, you know, for people to have access to cannabis just for that inflammation standpoint. The most beautiful thing about cannabis is there's a variety of ways to use it. You can learn all of these different ways. And the best way for you to use cannabis is going to be the best way for you. What you feel is the best, what gives you the best, you know, feelings of relief from whatever you're suffering from. And some people find it is a tincture. Other people find that it is vaporizing oils, and there's just an endless amount of ways. And what I've learned that over the years of doing this is the best way isn't necessarily my way.
Thank you. I'm monitoring the time, and I would really like to share my screen again so you see who we're about to introduce for the panel. I know you see them on screen, but seeing who they are and what they represent will really help. So I'm trying to share my screen again. So it gives you a little bit of, you know, title. Someone had asked for the title. So you see who is about to talk. So again, we're about to start the panel. Marcus, thank you so very much for your great presentation. So I would really like now to invite Bob, Wayne, and Sheldon, along with Dr. Chantal Munro-Knight, who will be giving us, you know, the context in the regulatory framework of processing. And so I want to start by asking, and thank you, Sheldon, what are some important considerations for processors? And I want to start with Chantal from a regulatory standpoint. And then from there, if we can just go from Bob, Wayne, Sheldon, and Marcus to respond to that.
Thank you, Tracy. And I'm sorry, so I'm gonna try to answer your question, but I also didn't want to have the conversation go further before. I just wanted to just add a couple of things to the discussion that was happening before. So just to say that our act and our regulations are strictly for medicinal. The government of Barbados, there's also a sacramental act, which is separate as well. So we, unlike other jurisdictions where perhaps everything is rolled into one, we are strictly regulating the medicinal cannabis industry, but there is provision under the Sacramental Act as well. I also want to indicate, you know, that we've tried as much as possible to have an inclusive conversation. We are building out an industry that is at its start, right? So like I said, we just opened up just in January. So the conversation will continue and the industry will roll out and grow, you know, as we learn. So at the upfront, I said it upfront, we may not be able to get everything in place as, you know, as everyone will like it immediately. But I believe that it's an ongoing conversation and that one that we will learn. But certainly we have tried as much as possible to be inclusive. In fact, the consideration for the Sacramental Bill and was not on the table, but emerged out of discussions that happened during the conversations about the Medicinal Cannabis Industry Act. And while others may say, you know, well, that's not even perfect, but at least, you know, we do have some movement and a commitment to an ongoing conversation as well. Tracy, in relation to your question about, you know, what are the important considerations for processors? So, just to say that at least in the context of Barbados, so our industry is under dual heads, one of those being the Ministry of Agriculture. That's where we sit, but also working very closely with the Ministry of Health as well. So that all products that are intended for local use within the medical market must also get approval, not must also, but get primary approval through the Ministry of Health Infrastructure. So within our act and our regulations, you're not necessarily going to find heavy directives in relation to this because it's already covered under the Ministry of Health Act. And what we have said to persons is to just make sure that they're responsible for having that interface with the Ministry of Health and understanding the regulations that will guide the process. That also comes to things like quality control, et cetera. That is going to be duly shared by our department in relation to our own inspectorate, but also as well the Ministry of Health. I'll stop there, Tracy.
Bob from NX Extractor, what are the important considerations for processors? So Bob and then Wayne, then Sheldon, and then Marcus.
Greetings. Give thanks for life, give thanks for the moment. All right. Quickly now, in terms of developing the industry, you would have to really look at, first of all, what is the established downstream, first of all. So just like we spoke about earlier, your tinctures, your capsules, whatever it is that you're going to be providing, you take a look at that, and then you look at the processes to build that product now. So to make that product, what is it that you're going to employ to make this product? So, you know, Marcus spoke earlier about, you know, the BHO, like about ethanol, water extraction mostly, you know, resin, and, you know, there are more, you know, technologies coming out. They have a algorithmic kind of, you know, extraction that they're using, and as a liquid nitrogen. But for your particular climate, this is where you take. And I think that ethanol, based on where you are and the sugarcane history and so forth, you know, the retrofitting and just the space and availability, you look at the cost of production to get the downstream product doing, and then you target the cultivation now to fit it. So it kind of works almost backwards. So you know what you want your patients to have. You look at which one of the processes best fit your climate and the cost of production to get these products, and then now you cultivate now to fit it. So it's a targeted approach right through. So that's, you know, in a general, you know, nutshell where it is. And I would just like to just quickly, I'll just make a small point in terms of the medicinal versus maybe sacramental or whatever, just to put us on point where we are and just to get our mind frame is. Now, our medicinal benefit, you're looking for something that is scientifically proven, replicatable. So who is familiar from the Barbados Society? What is a product? Say I went out and I had something bad to eat. You know, like how we have Andrews or in the States, they say Alka-Seltzer. What is it, the product that is colloquial, that is known locally? Give me the name.
Panadol.
So if you have an upset stomach, you take Panadol.
Bad headache.
All right. So I'm going to work. I'll work with it because it's just an example. So there's a Panadol. It comes in three packages, a pink, a yellow, and a blue. So you have an upset stomach, you take the pink one. Now, if you travel to Jamaica or to New York, wherever it is, and you have another upset stomach, and I bring a Panadol, but it's orange. Yeah, so you don't have the pink one. You know why. You're looking for a specific relief for that specific dis-ease or discomfort that you have. So you need it to be somewhat replicatable every single time. And that is really what the medicinal difference is going to be. So with these products now, the standardization and bringing these to point will give you that replicatable medicinal relief every single time. And then now, just like how your doctor might give you a 200 milligram, and you say, yes, it works for the pain, but I'm a little woozy, and he box the dosage after maybe 150 milligram. It's the same size pill. It's the same way they're going to take it now, once they have isolated these compounds. And so that is really, you know, it's a pretty much the same flow through. So it's just to get everybody familiar with it. And what I really love about the Barbados, what they did, especially in including the sacramental, you know, rights, or, you know, in terms of recognizing it, is that it really allows the bridging of the gap. No. So the rest, you know, feel comfortable to do what they have been on now, then the scientists now can form replicatable procedures from this. So that bridging of the gap, I really see it coming together and providing a strong identity for the whole industry, you know, to move forward, that's concerned. So give thanks for the moment again, Rastafari.